Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this episode, we're going to have on Sam Voss. Sam Voss's name was given to me by the owner of Redneck Blinds. He texts me an image of a monster buck that he shot this year and said, man, you should get this guy in the podcast. He kills a lot of big bucks. So I gave Sam a call, and he has killed a lot of big bucks out of Redneck Blinds. He's killed a lot of big bucks on private land that he leases and some ground that he owns. And so today we're going to talk about the ins and outs of leasing property. That's something a lot of people are interested in. And we're going to highlight a couple of his big buck stories. His strategies are a little bit different than some of the guys I interview. Obviously, it works for him. He's killed some bucks that are over 200 inches. And then this year, he killed a buck in the early season. I mean, we're only in October right now. He killed a big buck in the early season, and he's going to tell that story. Before we get Sam on the podcast, I want to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds. If you're in the market for a new blind, check them out. Not only do they make some great hard-sided blinds, they have soft-sided blinds. Their ghillie blind is one of my favorites. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, if you'd like to film your hunt, check out fourtharrowcameraarms.com. They also make a final rest shooting system that attaches to a redneck blind or a lot of different blinds for that matter, or a ladder stand that is perfect for resting a crossbow or a rifle. Windscent, makers of vapor deer scent technology, been tested by Tracker John. His bloodhounds were able to scent that vapor urine from hundreds of yards away. So just kind of a breakthrough in scent technology. Morale Targets, makers of the High Roller Target, Huntworth clothing. If you need some new hunting clothes or a new pair of hunting gloves, check out huntworthgear.com. Awesome clothing that won't break the bank. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane, Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads, my favorite broadhead for years and years, Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, a rest that is designed to get out of the way of your arrow, even if the arrow is traveling faster than 400 feet a second. Illinois Connection Outfitters, I'm actually headed there this week to hunt with my son during the youth season. The Outdoorsman's, makers of high-end tripods and backpacks for the serious hunter. And Wilderness Athlete. I use a lot of Wilderness Athlete products. My favorite is Hydrate and Recover. It's a great energy drink that doesn't have a pile of sugar like most drinks. So check out wildernessathlete.com to get a discount. Enter Drop 10 at checkout. Now let's go ahead and get Sam on the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Sam. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Tracy. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I'm actually packing up this morning to take my son to Illinois for their youth season down there. Going to be hunting with Illinois Connection. So that should be fun, trying to squeeze this interview in before we go. So thank you for taking the time out of your schedule today and doing the interview.
Absolutely. And
so, good luck in Illinois. Yeah, hopefully. It's supposed to be really warm, unfortunately, but it is what it is. You just deal with it.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit. You just killed a giant down in Kansas. So tell me that story a little bit. How big was he? How old was he? How many years had you been chasing him?
You know, that's all kind of tough. He's been in an area on a lease, at least a bunch of ground down there. Southeast Kansas is mainly where I hunt. And this buck in particular was on a property that I just started leasing last year with a few buddies, a couple of buddies, I should say. One of them didn't draw a tag. We had about three or four bucks last year that were in this area. No one actually ended up hunting the farm, so it worked out pretty good that they were able to stay in there and grow. No one hunted this farm at all. We had several pictures of some deer that were, you know, around that four-year-old range, maybe some that were in the five. We're not 100% certain which deer that was, but we think we have a pretty good idea. This is one of them. He blew up. He went from 140s, probably. We never found sheds, but he went from 140s to, he ended up being 175 and a half this year.
Wow.
Real big frame. Yeah. 26 inch beams, just over 21 inch spread. Way bigger than I had thought. I don't tell a whole lot of people about where I hunt these things until,
after the fact. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't show a whole lot of people that deer, and everybody kind of pegged him at mid 160s, and he ended up being quite a bit bigger than that. And I knew he was as soon as I saw him crest the hill. He came out the bean field and he walked right towards me. I had a 12 foot trailer a few years ago that I had that I bent the axle on, and it would ride, but it wouldn't eat up tires pretty bad, so it didn't ride well. So called Danny, had a pretty good idea of what to do, and he told me what to do for a blind, and actually bolted a blind to that trailer.
Okay, yeah.
Got permission to the from the landowner to pull that in there on the trailer, and just hit it real good. And I was sitting in an area that it was hid well, and that buck just walked straight towards me. He had no clue I was there.
Okay,
and so. Got lucky early in the season. Age wise, he was bigger body wise than we thought. I really think he's probably six. He's for sure five. I think he's actually probably six.
You know, when I do these interviews, you know, with a lot of people who manage land, it does seem to be, you know, between four and five or five and six is where they'll gain 20, 30, 40 inches sometimes, you know. So yeah, I would guess he's probably five or six for sure.
Yeah, his body was much larger than anticipated. And you know what, in retrospect, once I go back and start looking through more pictures, there was a deer in there that was probably threes. It was a younger eight pointer. And he actually had a very big body for an eight pointer as well. And I really think that's what threw us off. He wasn't in there a lot with any other does or any other deer, but that was what he was doing.
So tell me the backstory behind this deer. Had you had cameras out all summer? Probably. I mean, were you getting pictures of him?
No. So this property that I have with him, it was a lease that we have. there's some cattle that are on it throughout the year, and the guy does not winter the cattle, but he has them in there usually until September-ish. And he called me early and said, "Hey, I don't have, I pulled the cows out. We'd had such a dry year." He said, "I pulled the cows out. You know, have at it. Property's yours." I said, "Okay, great." So, I got down there a little bit later than anticipated, but I ended up getting cameras out. I pulled that blind over there. And then kind of just started recon at that point, which for me, that part of the year is usually pretty late. I always have a pretty good idea of what's there. Generally, and obviously some things move, but I have a pretty good idea of what I'm after by that point. And by the time I got my first picture of him, he was very well developed. He was towards the end of his velvet growth, the growth part anyway, not hardening. So I knew right away he could definitely be a target. Like I said, we didn't have any idea that he was that big. Like I said, I think we were pegging, you know, mid 160s. Hoping it was bigger, but it was a pleasant surprise to get him. But the pictures on him, the video, he's pretty impressive. I just never dreamt that a deer like that would have scored that high, but he did.
Now, was he following a particular pattern?
He was up until 2 days before season, before the muzzleloader opener. Every day he would come and come walk up through, and I knew about where he was coming from. There's a highway over in that area. So I figured he was coming from that direction, but not by the highway, where it turns out he was actually by the highway. I figured he was coming relatively close to the blind, on a south wind is what I needed there. Or at least something, out of the west, and actually even some east for that. But he was pretty much on the same pattern up until 2 days before season, and then he just plain disappeared, 100% gone. I was bummed. I thought that he'd either got hit by a car, you know, someone road hunted him, or he just left. Deer do that. Old deer do that. But sure. He was on a perfect pattern. I went out there opening night, didn't have any luck. Funny enough, my cousin killed a big deer that night just south of me out of a redneck as well, actually, now that I think about it. And okay. I had to help him get that out. So I ended up not hunting the next couple days. I was waiting on the temperature to drop. But then he changed back his pattern the day before. I ended up killing him to come back. But he was 100% gone up until that. But before that, he was, you know, right at daylight and at night.
So. Okay. What made you pick the corner of that bean field to put that blind? I mean, was that his part of his corridor?
Yeah. The only reason I did that, well, a couple of reasons. One, that edge was, it had food, obviously. There was a creek in there. It's not much of a creek now, as dry as we are, but there's a creek over there that he'd get water. And then on that particular piece, that's where everything choked down through the woods and it narrowed. And so I could see through that narrowing, you know, it might not have been narrow enough to get a shot, but you could for sure see it. Everything else in there was real thick. So it was tough to see it. So I figured that was my best opportunity at him there. Plus I'd walked through that part, you know, last year, and I jumped some deer on that other side, actually in the tall grass. So that was the spot. It was only 300 acres, 320 acres actually, but, I only had one camera, one blind set up. So that was the spot, make it or break it.
How far was he when you shot him then?
20 yards, maybe.
He came. Oh, wow. He came and there was a muzzleloader?
Yeah, he came running in. He came from 200 running in, and I had the blind set up on basically the 90-degree corner, and he just came. He came running in. I don't know why. I still don't know why. He just came running in. He was facing me. I couldn't get him to stop by the time he stopped. He was 20 yards and facing me still. I took a low neck, kind of high chest shot, and that's a crushing shot, but I don't like to take that. But yeah, he was 20 yards. He was close.
Wow. Had a death wish, I guess.
I guess. He got his wish.
Now, when Danny told me about your buck, he said, you know, you've had a long history of killing big bucks out of redneck blinds. And, you know, what have you learned about hunting out of blinds? You know, there's certainly some strategies that guys employ when hunting out of pop-up blinds or redneck blinds. You know, you've killed some monsters out of them. Is there anything you do particularly as far as setup or where you put them that has been a key to your success? Or is it just because they really help hide your scent? You know, what's your strategy there?
So I'm a little bit of everything. My biggest opinion is the scent that holds the scent. I actually don't even open windows on the blind when I'm in there. Last year when I killed my first 200, it was hot in there opening night. I mean, 90 something degrees, and I left the windows closed just to keep scent in. I'm a big believer in the less scent that's out there, the less likely they're going to be able to, you know, bust you. You know, you can beat their eyes, you know, you can beat their ears, but you can't beat their nose. And I just, sure. I'm a firm believer in those blinds. You know, I keep a couple chairs in there that are generally pretty quiet. So I try to stay as quiet as possible. You know, if you set them up the right way, in my opinion, I only leave generally one window open for where I think my deer is. And I'll, a lot of the times, back one end up to the woods. And I, a lot of the time, don't even open that curtain. And so it's pretty black in there. I just think blinds are the way to go to conceal your scent. You know, I still hang on a limb from time to time, but I just don't think it's, as far as hunting a target trophy, you know, smart deer, that goes for does too. They can smell better than anything. So I think the scent control's the best thing.
So at what point do you open the window in a blind?
I will generally, keep my finger. So you have to have it's kind of funny because you got to make sure those hinges are off. I've made the mistake before of trying to tug on that blind and one of the hinges is closed. Haven't done that more than once. I can promise you that, but, I have my, make sure everything's unhinged, and then I will literally keep my finger on the, edge of the window. And then my other hand will be on my bow or my gun or whatever it is. I'm ready to go. So I don't keep that window open for much more than, you know, sometimes 10 seconds. I just don't have it open very often.
Have you ever been busted? Have you been busted by deer trying to open that window?
Never opening a window. No. I've had the wind change and been busted because wind changed a different direction, but no, I don't have, I've never been busted with those windows. You know, if you, there's a few tricks with them, you know, you just gotta, before you start hunting that night, the water and the vacuum on those will get, they'll get suctioned from time to time.
Yeah.
Yep. So you got to make sure you, you get in the blind and pop it, but that's with anything else. That's no different than anything. Opening a window, it's going to make the sound. So do that. And then I generally try and kind of wiggle my chair to make sure it doesn't make any noise when I'm moving around, but just make sure stuff's not around your feet. Just don't make any noise.
Sure. Now, you, before the interview, you kind of listed off the size of bucks you've killed in the last few years. Why don't you go ahead and do that for the listeners, just so everybody can get a idea of the caliber bucks you're killing.
Yeah. So, starting in, I didn't really start getting real big ones until probably, five, I say real big, it's all relative, I guess, but you know, 5 or so years ago, my first big deer scored 189. That same year, I killed a 182. The next year it was a 167. That was actually out of a redneck as well. And then the following year I killed my first 200, a 181, and then now this, 175. So had a pretty good run. That's in Kansas and Missouri. So I'm splitting states where I have a pretty good advantage there, getting a couple tags.
But. Sure. So what do you think? I mean, you have a pattern you're creating here, a consistent pattern of killing giants. What do you feel like the greatest thing you do is? Is it leasing ground? Is it scouting? You know, what is your key to success?
It's all of that, I guess. You know, the more ground you have, my brother and I have talked about this a dozen times, you know, the more areas you have to hunt, the more likely you are to have a bigger deer come in. And you can be selective and let, you know, 4 or maybe even a 5-year-old go on another property. So the more grounds you have, it's pretty simple. It makes it easier. I've got buddies up in Northeast Kansas that have, I think he's got 15,000 acres or something like that. And they pull,
oh, wow,
they pull big ones out of there every year. Well, he's an outfitter, so that's his job. But still though, it's just the amount of acreage they have that helps. You know, I scout a lot. I put a lot of work into it. So I've got cameras out there, you know, not on every tree, but in good spots. I try to find history of it. I try to go in neighborhoods where I generally know a few things, where I'm not walking around blind, but you know, you got to put the time into it. I put a lot of work and effort, a lot of money in it. It's not an easy thing, but once you kind of get a idea of what to do, you know, you don't change it. You just keep kind of going that path.
You know, something I haven't talked about on this podcast hardly at all is leasing. Obviously that's something you do a fair amount of. So maybe let's break down, how you go about getting a lease. What can someone kind of plan on paying? You know, what are you looking for in a lease? Are you driving up and down a road and you go, man, that'd be a nice property to hunt, go knock on a door? What's your strategy?
Yeah, that's part of it. It's a lot of, I look at maps though. Mostly just know, I'll know different areas of where I've hunted personally, or, you know, like where my cousin just killed a big one, or, you know, clients, buddies, things like that. And so I'll look at maps and look at boundary lines and see what's what. That it's getting increasingly harder to do, to find them for numerous reasons. One, because a lot of people don't want the liability of having a hunter on their property, which I absolutely do not blame them. You know, they don't make a ton of money off of the lease anyway. So why do they want to have the risk of someone come out, fall out of a deer stand and be injured? That's part of it. A lot of these people I've known for a while, or they trust me, or, you know, if you get in with a couple bigger guys that own some bigger ground, they'll help you out and tell you what's what over here. And just being generally nice. I mean, don't force them or try to force them to lease their ground. You know, if people know you're an ethical hunter and people know that, you know, you don't go out and just kill 10 deers or, you know, tear up their property. You know, that's kind of it. I've had multiple people tell me before, you know, don't tear up the property or you're out. And that's 100% true. They, They don't care about the money. They want you to value their property. I've hiked in before. And I say hiked. I've walked in, you know, maybe half mile to check cameras before, you know, put out mineral stuff like that. I had to walk because I didn't want to tear up stuff. So if you respect their property, you know, leave it better than you got it, then they'll be more open to letting you come back. But, you know, just try to find good areas that, you know, try to stay away from stuff that's being overhunted, things like that, which is also getting harder and harder. But, you know, just that's my, you know, generalities of it.
Do you knock on doors or what's been your key to success? Okay.
Yeah. I've knocked on doors. I have an ongoing joke with a guy here in Kansas City. It's on the Missouri side. He's in a gated area. I found his property lines on a map, and I have a feeling it's a great area. And I have rung his doorbell 4 years in a row. He's turned me down every single year. And he even told me this past year, he laughed and he said, "I don't mind, but my wife will kill me." He said, I'm sorry, but I can't let you hunt out here. And I said, "No problem." And I said, "I'm going to come back next year if you don't mind." And it's an ongoing joke now. He laughs and says, "No problem. Ring the doorbell." So I'm going to get shut down next year more than likely. But I did have the same exact thing happen on another property, probably a half a mile away from there. And I caught the wife and she said, "You know what? Yes, go ahead." So it does work.
Okay. So are you using Onyx Maps or how are you finding these places?
No, I sell farms. And so I've got a membership with something called MapRite or actually HuntWise is another one I use for when I'm on my mobile. It just allows you to pull up and see where you are and go from there. I've seen Onyx would do the same thing, but I just use a couple different ones.
Sure. Okay. I'm actually HuntWise. I live outside Grand Rapids, Michigan, and HuntWise is right in my backyard.
I like HuntWise. I have a client from Louisiana that showed that to me probably 3 years ago, and it was pretty impressive to me. I do like it. I use that quite a bit.
Okay. So what can someone plan to pay for a lease in your neck of the woods?
You know what? I think, unfortunately, the price has gone up again. I spoke to a gentleman yesterday. I'm already trying to plan for next year, but I spoke to a gentleman yesterday, a very nice guy. And he wanted $25 an acre for this year, just the remaining year. So today's October 9th. You'd get the majority of the season, but you wouldn't get turkey or anything with that. And he said next year that is probably for the full year is probably going to be 30. So they are going up in price. That's for sure. You know, if you're lucky, you can get in some that are 15 bucks an acre, maybe 10, probably you're going to, if you find one for 10, it's probably not going to be all that good. It's going to be probably a lot of waste ground, but as far as hunting is concerned, but you know, it's all relative too. You know, you can find some spots that are 40 acres that are awesome. So that's worth 25 bucks an acre. But if you find some that are 400 acres and there's only 10 acres to hunt on it, you know, to me, that's not necessarily worth even $10 an acre.
Have you ever looked at, has that been a strategy at all, trying to find a smaller parcel?
Absolutely.
Maybe an overlooked parcel?
No, absolutely. There are so many that are overlooked. People don't know, or people have just not taken the time to go knock on, you know, Mr. Wilson's door. And, you know, the worst thing that happens is they can say no. So I'm not too opposed to it. I try to go in with, someone that knows someone. At some point, or, you know his cousin or friend or wife's friend or something. But, as a whole, you don't know. And a lot of the time it's not going to work. So it's a lot of the time it is a waste of time, but sometimes it works. You know, you do it 10 times.
What's the smallest parcel? What's the smallest parcel you've killed a big buck on?
Probably 5 acres.
Okay.
Yeah,
now, is that a lease or you just had permission?
No, just had permission. Just had permission.
Okay. What about a lease? I mean, are all your leases larger?
Yeah, they're all between that 300 to 500 acre mark generally. I actually just went and looked at another one that was, I think, 200 acres. I try to get them to be, somewhat bigger, but I would not be opposed at all to I would lease 10 acres if it was the right size, right price, and right area. That wouldn't bother me. It's time consuming. That's the trick about it. You know, you got to take the effort to go out and do it. So shifting your stuff, removing things, it's hard. So I wouldn't go to North Central Kansas and lease 20 acres. But, you know, if it's 20 acres, that's 2 miles away from my property. Absolutely. Or in my property or another place I am. Absolutely. I would do that.
Okay. Okay. Tell us another story, you know, a success story from a lease. You killed a 200 incher. Was that off a lease or ground you owned?
No, that one was off of a lease. As far as leasing is concerned, So I killed a 189 off of the lease as well, a few years ago. That wasn't actually necessarily a lease. That was more of just permission to hunt, in an area on the Missouri side of, or east of Kansas City. Had some pretty good luck there. I've got a buddy of mine that I lease a place with out in Southeast Kansas as well. And we've had some pictures of some very good deer on there. He lives actually out of St. Louis, so it's a little bit tougher for him to pack his stuff up and drive over and hunt like it is for me to be in the stand in a couple hours from my house. So he's limited in that regard, but we've had some pretty darn good deer on picture on some of our leases. The problem is you got to lease them for, you know, at least 2 years, sometimes three, because you don't know who was in there before you and you want to try and get a history of it. So it's not an easy thing in that regard.
Okay. So go ahead and tell us, a story from last year's buck, maybe. Obviously, you're killing some big bucks. So what's your key to success? You're putting a lot of time in, but, you know, it's about putting a puzzle together and you know, maybe share the details.
Absolutely. I'm kind of obsessive when it comes to it. So I'll stare at maps for hours and hours and hours and try and figure out, you know, where they're coming from. For instance, last year, the deer really made no sense. I had pictures of him early. I had pictures of him throughout the entire year. And I knew he moved on or before heavy rains, which didn't correlate with temperature at all. It was just heavy rains. And so, you know, I keep a Rolodex of all my pictures for the most part. Not all of my pictures, but a lot of my pictures. And so I'll go through them and just try and figure out where they're coming from, what they're doing. I have video set up a lot of my cameras. I do not go and scout in person because I think you're putting a lot of scent out in the field, and I try to do that as little as possible. So I don't scout in person, and I don't have a lot of my places don't have areas to, you know, look long, through spotting scopes or anything. So that particular deer, I just studied and studied and studied. He kept me awake at night. I had dreams about him, nightmares about him, whatever you call it. I knew he was going to be big. He had points going everywhere. He was just the epitome of Kansas. We're guessing he's probably seven. He was old. He was very old deer. Biggest body deer I've ever seen up until this year. I have not seen anything like that in person, very often, that's for sure. And so I studied these pictures, and then I would go back and look. There's a few people that I, you know, in the hunting world, they're not professionals by any means, but there's very few people that I trust, especially with something like that, that I ask their opinion. And, you know, they kind of come back and forth. We just chat with each other and say, you know, what do you recommend? What are you thinking? And so, you know, I've had on that particular deer, you know, numerous conversations with my brother. He's one of my go-to guys as far as, you know, figuring out what to do. It's not saying, you know, this is how you do it. It's here's what I think, or maybe this, just giving ideas. So I had talked to, you know, about three guys on that, thinking, you know, what do I do? How do I do this? And, it turned out great, you know, that the advice, but I knew I had, I knew I had some, a storm coming in, weather wise. And at that point he had started coming in after storms. And so there was absolutely no reason why he should be coming in that day other than the rain. It's hot. It was muggy. It was not a pleasant hunt, I would say. And, I looked at the weather and I just thought, you know, today's the day. And I went out that night and, he was one of the first deer I actually saw. I saw a couple deer early and then the field just kind of emptied. And then I saw him relatively early. He came in from the east, I guess, and then jumped back in the woods and ran off like he'd smelled me. And then he came back in. He came back in about 10 minutes later, right next to me. And when he was walking through, a young, probably 2-year-old walked past him, and it agitated him, enough that he took his mind off of everything and, you know, opened up the window and tagged him pretty good. So he went down right off the field. But, yeah, that was
a bow kill.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
and what day was that?
It was October 3rd, I believe.
So I mean, is early season one of your, you know, tricks, so to speak?
The only I've killed, two of those, I think those deer I was just rattling off a minute ago. Only two of those, did I kill, I'm trying to think here. Yeah. Did I kill later? The 167 actually was later in the season because, my wife and I had a little girl. So I was at home, with her a lot. So I didn't get out that much that season. And then, which is funny because actually, no, I take that back. I did, because I missed him earlier in the year. I missed him actually, I think, on September 20th. I'd missed him, and then he came, ended up coming back, and I killed him later. But most of my deer are killed. I've killed a lot opening night, for sure the opening week, just try to get them on a pattern, figure out where they are and go.
So the buck you killed last year, it's talking about, how big was he?
I killed that one I was telling you about was 202.
Okay. And so a consistent pattern, basically after a storm, is how you killed him.
Yeah. Yeah. He came in. And how only okay. reason I caught that is because he came in on what time was it? My wife and I were driving back home to my family's, and, I vividly remember being that, thinking, oh, no one's going to be, there's nothing going to be moving. And when I checked the cards, he was out there at something like 3 p.m, but it was right after a heavy rain. I thought there's no reason he should be there. And so he moved on after heavy rains. I don't know why, but he did.
Wow. Yeah. How many times did it take you to figure that out? Like, did you see that on your cameras several times?
Yeah.
That he was
I caught that pretty quick because I was dumbfounded of how he'd move and not move. That particular spot, I'd killed a pretty good deer. The first year, I guess, I owned that place, and he was very inconsistent as well. And so I just assumed it was, was a pattern that they don't have a pattern. And so I just guessed that that's what it was. But when the rain thing started, it happened, I think, the third time when I caught it. And we had actually gotten some pretty good rain that year, but it was after rainstorms is when he came in. And when I finally figured it out, I say figured it out, it was probably pure luck. It was just, you know, that's what it was. But he hadn't been there for weeks. He hadn't been there for, I think, 10 days. And that was, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to take a shot and go, because it's after rain. You know, fronts like that do weird things. So that was my mentality, and it worked into my favor. Probably dumb luck, but it did work.
How many of these deer that you've killed, you know, less than 3 or 4 sits? I mean, is it typically your first or second sit?
I'm trying to think here. So that one was the one last year was the second, maybe second or third sit. This year was my second. Then the same year I killed that 202, I killed a 181. That was my first sit. The year before that was not my first sit because I missed him earlier in the season. And then I just didn't hunt a whole lot because of, our daughter being born. So that was probably,
okay,
I'm guessing fourth or fifth. It's not a ton, but I'm guessing fourth or fifth sit. The one that gave me the biggest amount of flack was the one I killed, with a rifle. Actually, that tells you how late in the year it was. I believe it was December. I think it was 8th or 9th. I don't remember on that, but, I killed him with a rifle, and man, we played cat and mouse. I had pictures of him early in the year, middle of the year. He'd come in for 2 days straight, leave for 3, come in for 1, leave for 7, be in for 4, leave for Two, he was just so inconsistent. He'd come in at night. He'd come in the morning. And it was all in this food plot I had out. And he just was the most inconsistent deer. And that particular week, my wife was in, I think, D.C. for work. I believe she was gone for work. We didn't have our daughter at the time. And so I just said, hey, I'm living out there. I'm gonna get this thing. I'm hunting every night. It's getting late in the season, and that's what I got to do. And so I ended up getting in that first night. But that was the latest in the year by far. That was December 9th. I try to get them early so no one else can.
So basically, I mean, to sum up what you're saying here, you use scouting cameras and maps, and you really figure things out, you know, and then just slip in and kill them right away. Kind of like a private detective, a sniper, so to speak.
Well, if you want to glorify it like that, sure, but
I mean, I'm not trying to glorify it, but that's kind of what it taught, you know.
Yeah.
I do a lot of interviews, and people spend weeks chasing a buck, and it seems like you just stay out of there and don't hunt unless everything's perfect.
Yeah, I try to. I definitely try to. And what's funny is I've told people this, you know, multiple times, that my deer season is shifted a little bit. You know, most people start September 12th, and that means they go out, start working on it September 11th. You know, I start in June, so I'm kind of up a little bit farther with some of the recon and stuff I have. You know, I've got other buddies that do that too, and they do really well. You know, a lot of them will hunt early season. One of my buddies' sons killed a 195 this year, but you know, they go in early. You know, if you can catch them on that pattern, then they're so much easier to kill, because they haven't been educated by your neighbors. They haven't been educated by you. You know, if you've been, you know, lucky enough to keep scent out of there, or smart enough, I should say, to keep scent out of there, then they should be on a somewhat of a regular pattern. You know, don't go in there and start doing your research in September. You know, do it in June. Actually, I walk through after season a lot of the times. I'll go through when I'm turkey hunting, things like that. So, you know, it's not rocket science. It's just, I put a lot of time and effort into it, and I'm kind of obsessed with it too at this point. So I try to get it figured out sometimes. But I've had, you know, for every big deer I've killed, I've had just as many leave. You know, I've had deer every single year that I thought were going to stick around, and that were big deer, 170s, 180s, maybe 190s. And they just, 2 days before season, they leave and they're gone. It's just, it's a fact of it. It's just how it works.
Do you have any tags left to fill?
I haven't even bought a Missouri tag yet. my wife and her in-laws, bought a place down in central Missouri. And so there's nothing down there that's insanely big to hunt yet. And then I'm trying to get a lease maybe in southern Nebraska or northern Missouri, but I'm kind of tagged out at the moment. A little bummed, to be honest with you. But I've got I drew a mountain lion tag in Montana for this fall. And so I'm focusing on that at the moment, I guess. So that's the only tag I have to fill, but that's clearly not a whitetail.
Sure. Now, you sell property. Is that what you do for a living?
Yeah. Then? Yeah. Trophy Properties and Auctions is a place that I work for. They're actually based out of Baldwin, I think, Missouri, St. Louis. And so myself and a couple other guys are Kansas reps out here. And so I do land in Missouri and Kansas.
Okay. So that's how you know what's going on. Cool.
That's the secret, really, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, cool.
You learn a lot.
Well, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine.
Tracy, good
so
luck.
Cool. I appreciate it.
Man. You guys have and, one
yeah. You know, the outfitter that I work for, one of my marketing clients, is Illinois Connection. And he's got thousands and thousands of acres. But like I said, it's supposed to be 80 both days. They have booners on camera, certainly. But when it's going to be that warm, it'll probably be a crapshoot.
Yeah. May get lucky. I've read a lot about them. I've heard good things. So I know they have thousands.
Yeah. It's
like
been
20 something thousand acres.
Yeah. We had, 16,000 is what he has. And he's got about $2 million lodge. And, I've worked for him for 10 years handling his marketing and stuff. So, wow. He's just a great guy, great place. So Hopefully we find one.
Yeah, maybe he'll get you on one. They're weird.
Maybe he'll tie one up.
There you go.
Yeah, they are, for sure.
Very cool.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your time today.
Thanks for your time. It was great chatting with you.
Yep, take care. Bye-bye. It certainly was great having Sam on the show. He is a great guy who spends a ton of his time. And he called me after the interview shortly and just said, I just want you to know, not only do I spend a ton of time, I dedicate a lot of my financial resources to hunting. And it's not that I'm loaded or super wealthy. He said, man, I just love deer hunting and I spend too much money on it. So kind of funny. There's a lot of you out there like that. It's not just a rich man's game if you choose to spend your time and resources chasing big bucks, even if you're average Joe. Chances are you're going to kill some decent bucks. So I appreciate everybody listening. To find out more about me, visit my website, TracyBreen.com, TracyBreen.com. I use that website to book speaking engagements for wild game dinners. Until next week, have a great day, and God bless.